Welcome. I'm Doug Morgan, and you're listening to Uncommon Sense, where we hunt for the truth in the topics you're not supposed to talk about, Christianity and politics. You may have noticed the relatively creative title for this week's Fear of Missing Out report. Well, let me describe why we named it that. From a series of articles from the Daily Wire comes the first one, Squatting. It's an update to last week's story where a Venezuelan illegal alien who encouraged other illegal aliens to try to steal people's homes through squatting is now facing potential federal firearms charges. Lionel Moreno, who was recently arrested by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, officials, illegally entered the U.S. in April of 2022. The New York Post reported that internal federal documents obtained by the publication shows the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, or ATF, has been in contact with immigration officials and is considering bringing federal charges against him. Quote, the exact charges are not known, but sources said they would likely be brought under a section of the Gun Control Act which prohibits those on parole from possessing, shipping, transporting, or receiving firearms or ammunition, said the report. Moreno posted videos on social media of him at firearm stores holding firearms, asking his fellow followers which one they liked best, and saying that he could buy them in the stores. John Fabricator, a former ICE field office director in Denver, said charges under Gun Control Act Section 922.G are a serious matter and can result in significant legal consequences for Moreno. This should be a warning to any illegal aliens that possessing a firearm unlawfully will result in criminal charges and hopefully lead to a conviction, he added. While there is no proof that he ever purchased a firearm at a store, Peter Forselli, a former special agent for the ATF, told the publication that the ATF is likely seeking charges because he's an illegal alien in possession of a firearm that was transported across state lines, the report said. Based on the fact that he's advocating going into people's homes and taking them over is incredibly concerning, he said. This, you know, it still doesn't really help the growing squatting problem that Democrats and liberals have created, but it's nice to see them bringing charges at least, right? Well, smuggling refers to the fact that Texas authorities arrested a National Guardsman on Sunday after he fled from officers while allegedly attempting to smuggle an illegal immigrant into the U.S. Law enforcement officers of the Texas Department of Public Safety and the Kinney County Sheriff's Department arrested Savion Johnson in Brackettsville, Texas, after Johnson led law enforcement on a chase that reached speeds in excess of over 100 miles per hour, according to the New York Post. Johnson has been charged with evading arrest, human smuggling, and the unlawful carry of a weapon. If the allegations are true, the accused is a traitor and criminal. That was a quote by Abbott's press secretary, Andrew Mahalaris, the press secretary for Texas Republican Governor Greg Abbott. And this is what he told Fox News in a statement. Quote, we have zero tolerance for Texans who violate laws that directly contradict the mission we are seeking to achieve. The accused illegal smuggling may subject him to a mandatory minimum prison sentence of at least 10 years, he said. he deserves more. Kinney County Sheriff Brad Coe identified Johnson as a member of the Texas National Guard who was taking part in Abbott's Operation Lone Star. It's a Texas initiative to combat illegal immigration into the state from its border with Mexico, according to the New York Times. Quote, "It's not a good thing, but he's not the first one we've picked up that associated with the National Guard," Code said. "We're picking up attorneys, preachers, old ones, young ones, juveniles. The money is out there." Johnson was allegedly offered $5,000 to $6,000 to smuggle the alien, who was also arrested, according to the Post. And Johnson allegedly sped away from a Border Patrol checkpoint in a government vehicle and led officers on a 15-mile chase. The vehicle was stopped after officers used spike strips to blow its tires. Johnson is the latest law enforcement officer to be arrested for allegedly attempting to smuggle aliens into the U.S. And in June, authorities arrested two soldiers, including a National Guardsman, in the same area as Johnson for allegedly smuggling illegal aliens. Abbott's latest effort to combat illegal immigration into the United States involved the passage of a law that makes it unlawful entry a state crime, enforceable by local law enforcement. And of course, the law scheduled to go into effect earlier this year has been placed on hold by a panel of Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals judges while the court works through a legal challenge to the law's constitutionality. Now, the Biden administration has challenged the Texas law, arguing that immigration law enforcement is strictly the domain of the federal government. Now I know that this is a serious thing. I do. I understand that. But the drug cartels are doing this thousands of times a day, and nothing is being done about it. Well, shutting refers to what the Seattle Public Schools are doing. Seattle Public Schools are shutting down its program for, gifted and talented students, where the majority are white or Asian, citing, equity concerns. The school board voted to scrap its highly capable cohort program in 2020 after a 2018 survey found that only 3.7% of participating students were Hispanic and 1.6% were Black. Meanwhile, 11.8% were Asian, and the majority, of course, were white. Quote, "Numbers would suggest that within our city, predominantly white children are more gifted than other cultures and races, and we know that is absolutely not true," Carrie Hansen said. She's the district director of student support services for the school district, and this is what she told Parent Map in 2018. Quote, "Clearly, we are not identifying our children of color, and we need to get down to why," Hansen said. The district began phasing out the gifted program in 2021 and 2022 school year, and it will be gone entirely by the 2027 and 2028 school year. Starting next year, every school will have a new, quote, "more inclusive," highly capable neighborhood school model. The program is not going away. It's getting better, the school district said in a release. It will be more inclusive and equitable and culturally sensitive. Quote, "In particular, students who have been historically excluded will now have the same opportunities for services as many other students and get the support and enrichment they need to grow," the district said. How are they being excluded? Seriously. I mean, who's standing at the door going, "You're Black, you can't be a part of the cohorts program"? Currently, the district has three elementary schools, 5 middle schools and 3 high schools for students in the highly capable cohort program. Under the new program, gifted students will not be separated from other students, but will remain in the same classroom, and teachers will have to develop individual education plans for each student. Critics argue that the new model puts an unfair burden on teachers who do not have time or resources to give 20 to 30 students an individualized plan, especially since the district is currently facing a $105 million deficit. Oh, man. Some parents also worry that the new model will overlook more advanced students. Minority representation in the highly capable cohort program has improved since 2018. In the 2022-2023 school year, 8.2% of the gifted students were Hispanic and 3.4% were Black. The school district is made up of about 14% Hispanic and 15% Black students. Nevertheless, it is still replacing the program after years of attacks from critics. And in 2021, Rita Green, the education chair of the Seattle chapter of NAACP, called for the elimination of the Seattle's gifted program. Quote, "We wanted the program to just be abolished, period. The highly capable cohort program is fundamentally flawed, and it's inherently racist." There we go. You knew that word was coming in. That's what Green said anyway. The district's decision also comes amid broader criticism of gifted programs due to equity concerns. And in 2021, then New York City Democratic Mayor Bill de Blasio ordered the city's elementary schools to stop testing for giftedness. We can't be testing for giftedness. How dare people do that? You see, in a communist system, you can't bring everybody up. I mean, communism presents itself as, you know, equal for all. Everybody is equal. Everybody is equal. But you can't make everybody equal by bringing everybody up. It's just impossible to do it. What you have to do is you have to bring everybody down. That's what makes them all equal. And that's what's happening here. Snorting refers to what is officially a huge failure. Oregon has made processing small amounts of hard drugs a crime again after a failed experiment with decriminalization. Governor Tina Kotek, a Democrat, deeply Democratic, liberal, signed a bill into law on Monday that makes personal use possession a misdemeanor punishable by up to 6 months in jail. Like that's going to happen. But anyway, the new bill rolls back Measure 110, which was approved by about 58% of Oregon voters in 2020 and scrapped criminal charges for possessing small amounts of any drug, even hard drugs like fentanyl, believe it or not. The measure was the first of its kind in the country. Oregon was kind of the guinea pig. Instead of criminal penalties, offenders were hit with a maximum fine of $100 that was rarely enforced. I mean, really rarely enforced. Drug users could also get their fine dismissed if they called a hotline to get an addiction screening. But in the law's first year, only 1% of the people who received tickets for drug possession called the hotline, according to state auditors. And they didn't even have to show up for their appointment. They just got their $100 waived as long as they made the call. In the years since Measure 110 took effect, however, the law has become increasingly unpopular with residents as they deal with public drug use in their daily lives. Two years later, more than 6 in 10 voters said they thought decriminalization has made drug addiction, homelessness, and crime worse in Oregon. That's kind of a no-brainer. And this was according to a May survey from DMH Research. A combined 63% said that they strongly supported or would be somewhat interested in once again, criminalizing hard drugs. And so obviously a deeply leftist Democrat had to do it because it was just so highly unpopular. Meanwhile, fatal drug use and overdoses in Oregon have spiked, driven by, of course, the fentanyl crisis. The state is on track for, get this, 1,250 overdose deaths last year, according to the data that is still being compiled. And this is a stark rise from the 280 people who died of an overdose back in 2019. Some of the worst scenes of the drug crisis come out of Portland, where addicts shoot up daily in broad daylight downtown. I've seen it with my own eyes. In September, the Portland City Council passed a ban on using hard drugs on public property. However, Portland's new rules have been in limbo while drugs were still decriminalized at the state level. Mayor Ted Wheeler, speaking of another failure and another Democrat, has expressed support for Oregon's new law, which takes effect on September 1st. Quote, people are exhausted from feeling like they are under siege. They want order restored to their environment, Wheeler said. Although the new state law brings back criminal penalties for drug possession, it also encourages law enforcement to establish programs to send drug users to addiction and mental health services rather than the criminal justice system if possible. So we can officially, now call this not only a failure in Oregon, but also a tragedy. We have the same type of thing here in Washington, that it wasn't voted in, it was mandated by courts. And so, yeah, it's just an absolute failure and tragedy. We can only be referring to this next word, sniffing, to one person, right? Yes, you guessed it. President Joe Biden said on Monday that he did not declare this Easter Sunday as Transgender Day of Visibility. Yeah, he did not. That's what I said. Biden's claim comes after he's faced outrage from Christians for issuing a proclamation about it and posting about it on social media on Easter Sunday. Quote, today on Transgender Day of Visibility, I have a simple message to all trans Americans. I see you, Biden wrote on X, or his staffer did. You are made in the image of God, and you're worthy of respect and dignity. The report asked Biden about the matter during the White House Easter egg roll. Mr. President, what does Easter mean to you, sir? The reporter asked. Sir, what does Easter mean to you? Biden, who claims to be, of course, a devout Catholic, responded with, time for forgiveness and people getting together and a little bit of love and no phoniness. Be straight up with people. The reporter responded by highlighting criticism from the House Speaker Mike Johnson about Biden proclaiming that Sunday as Transgender Day of Visibility, when he said that, and Mr. Speaker Johnson, the other day said, that Speaker Johnson said you betrayed the tenets of Easter by proclaiming Sunday, Easter Sunday, as Transgender Day. He called it outrageous and abhorrent, the reporter said. What do you say to Speaker Johnson? And this is what Biden said. He said, he's thoroughly uninformed. I didn't do that. That was his words. Amid the ensuing backlash, the White House issued a statement suggesting Biden really didn't mean that. He didn't mean that at all. He meant that he hadn't been the one who established the Transgender Day of Visibility, or specifically chosen March 31st for its recognition this year. Quote, President Biden is right. He did nothing to conflict with the tenets of Easter, which he celebrated yesterday, nor did he choose the date of March 31st for the Transgender Day of Visibility, which has been set, which has set sign let's see here, since 2009. White House spokesman Andrew Bates said this to Fox News Digital in a statement. But the facts are that Biden issued an official proclamation on Good Friday that declared that Sunday, March 31st, which is also Easter Sunday, that's what it was Transgender Day of Visibility. Now, DeSantis, Governor DeSantis of Florida, responded to Biden's denial and remarks during a press conference on Monday, where the governor highlighted his latest victory for Floridians, which he said would save them hundreds of millions of dollars on toll roads. Quote, wait a minute, he said. He said that didn't happen? He said he didn't do that? DeSantis exclaimed, which raises the question that he's either not being honest with the public or he really didn't know what he's doing and what's going on. Which is true, right? I mean, that is definitely true. Who's running the presidency? Is it a bunch of woke 20-something-year-olds White House staffers? DeSantis asked. So I don't know who's in charge. The fact that he's not owning up to it, yeah, either way, it's bad. DeSantis said that the holiday was important and that he spent the day with his family. He said it's the most important for Christians, the most important holiday on the calendar, he said. And you know what Biden did, you know, I think was ridiculous. But it does raise the issue. Yeah. And this is the guy that the Democrats are going to push out there and run for a second term as president. I don't know. Anyway, all right, let's get to steering, right? Steering comes with an interesting investigation from the Daily Wire. Said the House Judiciary Committee is investigating whether major advertisers ran afoul of antitrust laws by coordinating about which news outlets to blackball. The committee, chaired by Representative Jim Jordan out of he's a Republican out of Ohio, obtained documents from the World Federation of Advertisers that show how it implemented a strategy to prevent major advertisers from doing business with disfavored news outlets. Yeah, the coordinated effort could have the effect of bankrupting news organizations that don't get the stamp of approval. The World Federation of Advertisers, or WFA, through its Global Alliance for Reasonable Media, or GARM, initiative, may be acting, well, inconsistent with U.S. antitrust laws and congressional intent by coordinating GARM members' efforts to demonetize and eliminate disfavored content online. This is what Jordan wrote in the March 27th letter demanding further documents from advertisers. Quote, evidence the committee has obtained suggests that GARM members, led by STEER team members, are colluding to demonetize conservative platforms and voices. Further, this coordination does not always resolve around brand safety and harmful content, as GARM publicly claims, but instead the desire to censor conservative and other views that GARM members disfavor. This is what Jordan said. The letters indicate that documents obtained by the committee suggest that the group tried to blackball mainstream conservative news organizations, specifically asking for communications referring to and relating to conservative news outlets, including Fox News, Daily Wire, and Breitbart. The letter went to major corporations on GARM's steering committee, and the letter seeks communications from the companies relating to categorization, demonetization, and elimination of online speech. They also, of course, went after X and Elon Musk, if you remember when he acquired Twitter. The probe suggests that companies that they could be held individually responsible for the actions that the group created, and that Garm may act in a cartel-like manner. Even though many of its members are normally competitors, they decided to team up together, right? Of course, this is all part of the WFA, and Garm is a part of the World Economic Forum, the WEF. No surprise there, right? In an announcement that seemed like something from Darth Vader, the World Economic Forum stated that the Global Alliance is creating a safe media ecosystem. Yeah, a safe media ecosystem. With companies that include Lego Group, Procter & Gamble, Unilever, NBC Universal, MSNBC, of course, Dentsu Group, WPP through Group M, Interpublic Group, Publicis Group, Omnicom Group, and Facebook and Google. In 2022, Garm added misinformation to the types of online content that it views as unethical to run ads against. So they formed and colluded with companies like NewsGuard, the Global Disinformation Index, and the Journalism Trust Initiative to try to basically just blacklist anybody that they didn't like. And that is not legal. that goes against antitrust laws. And so, in other words, they're trying to form a monopoly amongst themselves so that they can ace out anybody that they don't like. You know, we have experienced it here with this podcast. It is very difficult to advertise Uncommon Sense podcast. Been increasingly so. So please, pass this podcast on to a friend, will you? Word of mouth is obviously the best way to go anyway. And lastly today, we end on a more, well, maybe more of a pet peeve than anything else, but at least I'm not alone. You may have seen the sculptures that are made out of trash. I just took the family to the zoo the other day. They had a couple of these and I've seen them before. I think they're ugly. They kind of look like trash, really. And these sculptures that are made out of trash, yeah. Well, hikers who frequent the trails at an Arkansas state park are protesting the installation of sculptures that have been compared to a blob and the gaudy artwork from the film Beetlejuice. The petition that amassed nearly 3,000 signatures on change.org, calling for Arkansas Department of Parks and Tourism to stop installing these sculptures by the side of the trail at Pinnacle Mountain State Park and other state parks, said that these parks serve as sanctuaries for both wildlife and humans alike, offering this respite from urban life and an opportunity to reconnect with nature. This is what the petition author Joshua Hamilton wrote. He also said that the introduction of art installations disrupts this harmony, and the visual impacts can be jarring against the backdrop of natural scenery, altering visitors' experience and potentially disturbing local ecosystems. Now, Hamilton said, "These sculptures at the Pinnacle Mountain State Park are, well, they're particularly unappealing." They really are. If you take a look at these things, they're just nasty looking. Quote, "Looks like a jumble of trash. Looks like someone took tornado wreckage and stuck it up there on a slab of concrete." This is what someone told KATV. Matt Seeling, a mountain biker and visitor to the park, said that he couldn't even identify what one sculpture was meant to represent beyond a blob or something. Hamilton said several hikers have told him the sculptures resemble the gaudy artwork from the 1988 film Beetlejuice. "Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice," Hamilton quipped, and watched out for the sandworms, will we? So anyway, some of them kind of look like, I mean, they're just nasty. Like I say, probably a pet peeve of mine. I just don't understand the trash sculptures, but To each his own, I guess. But hey, if you are along the same mind, I would love to hear from you. Maybe you're just the reverse. You love them. I would love to hear why. And you can always do that at uncommonsensepodcast.com. Thank you very much for listening.
This podcast is a production of Morganite Communications.